This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors of our dominant culture and parent with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Evgenia Andrianova, where we talked about empowering teens and youth with powerful skills for success. Welcome to the show, Monica Tanner. Monica is married to her best friend. She's a boss mom of four small humans, weekly podcaster at On the Brighter Side, and relationship and intimacy sexpert. Monica's goal is to help you protect your most important relationships from any challenge that will inevitably come your way. I'm so excited, Monica, to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm so happy to be here, Jody.
And to have you back. I loved the original conversation we had. If you didn't listen to that episode, go back and check it out. And so have you back. I'm so excited. And I love your new angle, your new direction that you're going with on the brighter side to talk about marriage, to talk about intimacy. And this is such an important aspect of family culture is having a strong marriage, having a strong partnership with your spouse. And so I'm excited to dive into that. But first, I want to ask you an icebreaking question. And this is more just like for my personal interest of understanding how people tick. But what did you want to be when you were a kid? What was something you dreamed of being?
Oh, that's interesting. I guess it depends on how far back you go as a kid. I mean, I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to ride horses. I wanted to do all kinds of things like that. But I think really when I was a young kid, I wanted to be a pediatrician because I was so afraid of going to the doctor and getting shots. That I thought, like, once I got a little bit older, I was like, I want to be the kind of doctor that kids are so excited to go see, even if they're not feeling well, even if they know they have to get shots. I want them to be so excited to come see me. So that's like my original first job I ever really, really, really wanted.
Wow. And how did that shape who you've become? Has that inspired how you parent or how you interact with people and think about doctor's appointments or anything?
You know what? I think in a way it shaped the way that I have always tried really hard to make uncomfortable situations be more comfortable. So that's always been a desire of mine. So when I was a kid, going to get shots was super uncomfortable, right? And now, you know, when we're married and we have to, you know, admit that we might need help with our marriage or help with our intimacy or something like that, it's uncomfortable. And so I try to position myself in a way that I'm a lot of fun. And, you know, if you've got to get help with something like that, you know, I'm excited to go talk to Monica about it or something, you know. So it's shaped me in that way where I've always tried to help people feel comfortable no matter how uncomfortable the situation might be.
That is really cool. I love that. That's really neat, Monica. Like, what a cool approach to life to just be like, you know what? Let's just make an uncomfortable situation bearable and maybe even fun.
Right. So cool. We all have challenges. Everything's challenging, right? And sometimes we just have to ask for help. So if we can make that as easy as we can on people, let's do that.
I love that. That's so cool. Awesome. So what I like to lead to this discussion about marriage is understanding where we've gone wrong. So I'd like to discuss what is one dysfunctional belief or behavior in the dominant culture about marriage that you feel like we need to address?
Oh gosh. Well, I definitely think that marital intimacy is so confused and just disjointed in our culture. I mean, what happens is we get a certain number of a level of conditioning and programming as we're growing up. So we have these ideas. A lot of times sex is either not talked about at all in our families growing up. And sometimes there's a lot of shame around it. So we've got to overcome that. And then we figure that, you know, the human drive is sexuality. I mean, it's an important part of who we are and who we are together as a couple. But then what we have to draw on besides our family growing up is Hollywood, the porn industry, prevailing culture, and that's very flawed. Mm-hmm. So that is why I exist. A healthy understanding of sexuality and its place in marriage.
Say that last part one more time. You cut out just really quick.
Yeah. So that's why I exist, is to help people come to a healthy, thriving understanding of their own sexuality and its place within a marriage. So that's what I'm passionate about and I love. And there's a lot to that. It's a very taboo topic. People kind of crunch down and get all embarrassed. Even when you said sex word, I noticed you kind of gave a giggle.
It's so unconscious. Yes.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's difficult to say those words without kind of getting a little embarrassed and shirking a little bit. But it's so, so, so important. Yeah. So that's my passion. That's my drive, is to give people a really healthy understanding so they can own their sexuality and feel good and confident about it and understand it in a way that they can model really beautiful, healthy, thriving behaviors to their children.
Yeah. Wow. Cause what you talked about, that social conditioning, that has been like a major buzzword for me around family culture, that everything that becomes systemic was originally conditioned into us socially. And so it's like, we don't even recognize that it's happening because it's so normalized that that's the correct behavior, and anything else becomes taboo. And so I love that you're talking about basically normalizing this conversation so that it doesn't, because so it gets rid of that cliche or that weirdness or that uncomfortable feeling, because it's not something to be uncomfortable about, right? It's something that it's just, this is a normal part of our existence. This is our God-given ability to have intimate relationships and procreate and, all these things that are important for our existence, right? And for our mental and physical health. Yeah, right. We all do it. No, it's great to be able to open up the conversation, because, and like you're saying, we need to be able to model good conversation about intimacy with our families so that we can, again, socially condition that this is not something that we need to shrink from or be ashamed of. So why is this so hard to do? What is it that's happening in our culture, in our dominant culture? I mean, you touched on a few of these things, but like, say, for example, when we think about intimacy, most of the time parents, we go, oh my gosh, no, my kids are going to get curious, or they're going to look out for, they're going to start seeking out pornography or things like that. What other things have you noticed that is keeping us stuck in this culture of shame around intimacy?
Well, the shame culture, I don't know. I mean, that's a whole subject all on its own. That comes from, traditional religion and conservative views and, the problem with the shame culture is that we've all been given a sexual drive. I mean, that's just part of who we are growing up. Just like we want to learn, kids ask why the sky is blue, and they also want to know why males and females look differently. It's like something that we all have to learn. Now, the danger comes is when we don't talk about those things, we don't take responsibility for teaching our children these important truths, they're going to look elsewhere. And in our society, in our culture now, everything is at the push of a button. You can get to any dangerous information about anything you want in seconds. It's not protected in any way. So we have to buck up, put our big girl panties on, and figure out how we feel about human sexuality and teach it and model it to our children. Otherwise, they're going to learn about it through Hollywood, or they're going to learn about it through porn sites, or they're going to learn about it through their friends on the school bus. Like, yeah. It's gonna happen. It's not if, it's when.
Yeah.
And so if we don't take control of that situation, it's going to control us.
Yeah.
So it's just really, really, really important in the world that we're living in now to recognize by the time a child is 5 or 6, they're gonna need to know and understand that their parents are a good source of information about these things, that we're not going to get embarrassed, that we're not going to shame them, that we're not going to shut them up, that we're going to be able to handle a conversation about curiosities that come about human sexuality.
Yeah, wow, 100%. And like, that's one of the things that I talk about and teach about with family culture is that we need to be culture leaders with our families. That if we want our children to be socially conditioned to receive certain information, we have to lead out in that. We have to be the ones that, like you said, be mature about it and start addressing these things. But I think what this also comes down to, Monica, is as parents, we need to address our own issues about it. Okay. And so let's talk for a minute about that, because I just think that when, you know, how does our, as parents, as adults, as couples, how does our discomfort to talk about it impact our relationship with our spouse?
Yeah, huge. So I just did a whole interview about this earlier this morning, actually, because it's so important to understand our own sexual conditioning as well as our spouse's. It's really, really, really important to be able to look at, where did I get my ideas about this? Where did I get my ideas about my body? Where did I get my ideas about the other sex? Where did I get my ideas about sexual relations? What's good? What's bad? What's acceptable and what's not, right? My opinions and all of those things. It's really important to be able to do like a sexual self-assessment, basically, and just look at these things. Like, why do I feel these things? Why do I think these things? Why do these things make me uncomfortable? Whatever the case may be. And then to do the same with our spouse, to be able to discuss these things. Like, what was your first experience with anything sexual? Like, what was your first experience seeing somebody of the opposite sex? All of those things, those are really important discussions to have. So I am very vocal about this, obviously, online and everywhere that I go. And I've had, you know, women especially reach out to me and be like, I've been married for 20 years and we've never had a conversation about this. I don't know how to bring it up with my spouse now without making him feel like there's something wrong. And so I just want to invite you to whatever, wherever you are in your relationship, even before you're married, to look at and consider this really important, this important part of your identity. So it's just like your intellectual identity. It's just like social identity, just like your physical identity. It would invite you to take a really good hard look at how you feel about different aspects of your sexuality and really examine and understand that all of these things can be changed, that you have a choice, that these are the things you are conditioned by and programmed by. These are the experiences that you have that kind of built up your ideas and thoughts about this, but that can all be changed. So we can, you know, we can see and acknowledge that, you know, this is how my parents felt about this. This is what they taught me about this. This is what they didn't teach me about this. This is how it made me feel about this, or my religion, or whatever it is. And then say, okay, now I'm an adult and I get to choose how I want to feel about all of these things. And then I would invite you to seek out good educational materials, books, podcasts, guides, leaders, people that can help give you a healthy, thriving sense of your own sexuality and how the place it has in your marriage.
Do you know of some good books and things that you recommend?
Hundreds, of course. Yes.
I think that's scary too. If people are like, I don't want to pick up a book. And I mean, I used to work in a bookstore and there's a sex and intimacy section in every bookstore. And I was like, close my eyes when I go by it, because there's just very graphic images on the covers, right? And things, yes, like that. And so it's like, how do I find a book that's going to help me with this and not stumble on anything pornographic?
Right.
So if you have recommendations, that would help.
Well, there's a ton of people like me out there, you know, just really championing healthy sexuality. So I think maybe if you're, you know, worried about seeing something or, you know, reading a book is kind of an investment a little bit, like, there's tons of us that are out there. Like, if you, you know, if you are relating to what I'm saying, if, you know, if you feel connected to me, I have a resource page with all my favorite books where I've learned the things that I've learned, you know, and podcasts and things like that. I would say just kind of explore. Podcasts are pretty safe. You know, if you hear words you don't like, or if someone's saying something you don't like, you can easily just shut it off, right? So find podcasts or experts that are out there talking, and then, you know, ask them, like, what are the resources that you would recommend to start in this area? And then just use your best judgment. If you open up a book and you're like appalled and you're not comfortable with it, you know, you don't have to like shun it forever, but be like, maybe I'm not ready for this level, you know, close it up, find a more like starter, more comfortable, you know, place to start for you, and then return to it if, you know, once you have grown a little bit. So our sexuality is not like a one and done thing. It's not like, you know, today I'm going to write down all the ways that I feel about my sexuality and then I'm good with it, right? It's like something that evolves and changes over time. So it's really important to at some point go to your spouse and be like, hey, I'm really working on this right now. Like, this is something that's really important to me. I know it's important to our relationship. I would love to do this process with you or alongside of you, or just share what I'm learning with you. Just open up that dialogue and that conversation and, you know, see what happens. Be like, hey, I'm going to be really vulnerable here because I, you know, this is uncomfortable for me, but I think that it's really important and worth my time and energy. And so I would love your support in this in any way possible. And then just see what happens and see, you know, maybe they'll be interested in going right along the journey with you. Maybe they'll be interested in just hearing what you're learning and you know, piping in every once in a while. You know, I've seen it all different forms and fashions within a couple. So some, you know, some spouses are like, let me know when you're done. Some spouses are like, hey, I'm super excited. I want to do this with you. And some spouses, you know, and the spouses are anywhere in between. So there's no normal, there's no, you know, like right or wrong way to do it. I think the most important thing is just to decide that you're ready to develop this aspect of yourself, because it is a very important part of every one of us as humans. And then just start taking baby steps in the right direction and see what happens.
So why do people just ignore this part? I mean, going away from it being a taboo subject, you know, maybe do people just kind of ignore this just because they don't think that it's an important part of their life? And so exploring it, maybe they're just like, if I start exploring this, am I going to tread on immorality or tread on like something that's like carnal or, you know, human nature-y type of like, I should be more, what is it, prudent or like more, you know, self, what is it, less self-indulgent or things like that. Is that things that come up in the conversation you think about? Like, how do we overcome those feelings? Like, if I talk about this, then I'm going to be preoccupied by it. Or if I talk about this, then I'm going to become, I'm going to tread on like becoming less self, what is the word I'm looking for? Bridled, you know what I mean? In our vernacular, it's like, I just think of, that's the word that comes to my mind. You know what I mean? Like, you know, bridle your passions and you'll be full of love. That's a reference, in the LDS church. But, you know, I just think like, what do you say to people who have that concern? Like if I explore this part of me, then I'm going to become so consumed by it that I'm going to just be lustful. And then that's in any religion. Okay. Any form of being self and self-control, that's like a deadly sin. It's lust. Right. And so, you know, what do you do?
I think most of everything that you just said is going to be just somebody acknowledging that that's been conditioned inside of their through shame or, you know, religion or the way my parents taught or viewed it. You know, that's all conditioning in your mind. I mean, you know, developing your healthy sexuality is just like developing your skills to play soccer, right? I mean, nobody gets like totally consumed. Like, I want to learn to be a better soccer player, or I want to learn to lift weights, let's say, right? So it's something that you have to go, you have to stretch, and you have to exercise those muscles, and you have to be consistent with it, all of those things. It's the same as developing a healthy sense of sexuality. It's just, you're right. There's so much taboo. There's so much shame around it. There's so much like, unhealthy.
So many stories.
Yeah. It's the stories that are going on in your mind. And so I think it's just really important to recognize that. Be like, those are all stories that are going on in my head right now. And how realistic is that? Like, am I all of a sudden going to become a porn star if I start thinking about healthy sexuality? No. And then I think it's also really important to recognize the role that it plays in your marriage, because, you know, if you're going to go with all of that religious, like lustful, like vernacular thinking, God gave us sex within the bonds of marriage. And so if you are a married person and you recognize that sex is a very important part of your marriage and what keeps it, you know, I like to tell people, like, you say I do, and you're saying, like, I want to be with you for the next 60, 50, 60 years, right? Now, how boring would that be if there were certain topics and subjects and activities that were totally off limits? But in reality, like, our Creator gave us this to make our life more exciting and enjoyable and pleasurable and fun. And not to mention connecting and, all of the, becoming one, all of those things are so important. So you just have to kind of override that conditioning and programming that's keeping you stuck in this place where you're not finding it important.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is just recognize that is your conditioning.
Yeah.
Not necessarily accurate. And whenever you're ready, you can change it. So
100%. I love that. You know, that's something that it's like, because you have to be able to have these conversations. One book that I read that actually has nothing to do with sex, but it has everything to do with having the conversation, is called Crucial Conversations. Have you ever heard of that one? Mm-hmm. It's so good, because and they do give an example of approaching your partner to talk about sex and intimacy, and how to handle when you feel triggered, because we're gonna feel triggered, right? Like, and so when people feel triggered, they either fall into silence or violence. They either shrink back and say, I don't want to talk about this, or they get explosive and angry, right? And defensive or feel threatened. And so anyway, that's
something. That the book says those are the two options, because there, I have another option. Mm-hmm. When you feel triggered, you could fall into curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Ideally.
Right.
Yeah.
Why am I feeling triggered? What is this bringing up for me? What has happened in my past conditioning, programming, or experience that is causing me to feel triggered right now? And then you just examine that and you think, okay, is this really, what I want to use to define my life? So I've actually done two interviews today. And the other interview, we talked a ton about how our stories define us, mm-hmm. and how we can use our stories to create the life that we want. Like, we can't always control our circumstances. We can't control the weather. We can't control the economy. We can't control what other people think about us. Those are all outside of our control, but we can absolutely control our experience within those circumstances. And that's controlled by the stories we tell ourselves. So if we're being triggered by something, we can absolutely look at the story. What is the story I'm telling myself that is causing me to be triggered right now? And understand that you have all the power in the world to change that story whenever you're ready. So heal and, grieve and do whatever you have to do to retire that story and write a new one.
That's perfect. Monica, that's so perfect. So that's, I love that you contributed that. That's exactly the idea, is turn to curiosity and take inventory of where those stories come from, where those judgments come from. That's really what it comes down to too. It's like this, it's a judgment. And when we can let go of those judgments and just come from a clean slate and curiosity, I love that, to decide, okay, well, what can this become? What can we create from this?
Yeah.
So that's beautiful. That's so beautiful. I love that. So, okay. So then our kids are going to come to us and they're going to trigger us. So how do we check ourselves when our kids trigger us so that we can create an optimal circumstance for teaching our kids these things?
Yeah. So kids are just curious, right? So they're going to ask you why the sky is blue. That doesn't trigger you, does it? So it's the same theme. Fill their questions with the exact same demeanor that you would field a question about, you know, why does their elbow hurt when they scrape it? Like, why am I so intrigued by the opposite sex? Whatever it is, however, whatever age your child is at, their questions are just coming from a place of curiosity that was obviously put there by a divine source, right? They want to know the secrets to life and health and wealth and all of those things, right? And you get to be their leader and their teacher and their guide. So don't freak out when they come to you asking for your advice or your knowledge or your experiences. Just be grateful that they're coming to you and not to another source.
Right, right. So what can we do in our families in general? Like, say, just not even just about talking about sex and intimacy or our bodies and things. What are some ways that we can create a culture in our home where conversations can just happen? Where we can talk about those kinds of things,
or any kind of things. Safety and trust. So it's so, so, so important to develop and create an environment of safety and trust. We want our kids to feel like they're safe at home. Like my kids right now, I don't know why. I think it's because they're watching this show called Alone with my husband, where they're like putting these people out in like the wilderness and like there's bears and cougars that could eat them and they're all by themselves. And so my kids right now, they're not feeling super safe. And that's what I attribute it to, right? And so instead of sleeping in their bedrooms, they're all sleeping on the couch in my family room right now because they're not feeling safe and secure. And it's because of this outside influence, right? But the bottom line is they know that they're safe and secure in our home. They know that they're safe and secure. The doors are locked. You know, nothing bad is going to happen to them while they're safe within the walls of our home. And so I think that physical feeling of safety should extend to emotional and mental safety. Like we just have to create a place where our kids can be curious, where they can ask us their questions, where they can explore who they are and what they think about things and how they learn about things. And they're not going to get negative reactions or, you know, overblown, overreactive judgments from their parents, right? So we just need to instill in them the idea that we love them, we cherish them, that our job is to help them be happy and, you know, productive human beings. And nothing is off limits. Like you can ask us anything. You can come to us with any problem. You can ask us any question. You know, you can share any thought or idea, and it's all okay within the bonds of our home. So I think that's just a really important thing to develop in your family culture.
And it's okay to make mistakes. So that's how we learn too.
You know, good.
Not to make such a big deal about every little mistake and pass judgment, but just say, well, let's talk about that.
Weaving that into the tapestry of your family culture is so important. We just recently had this family discussion. It happened because one of our children made a mistake and our neighbor pointed it out to us, right? And so here we had this beautiful teaching moment and he was so ashamed of himself. He didn't want his siblings to know. He was just like we weren't shaming him, but he just felt very, very, very badly about this mistake that he'd made. And so we kind of called it, and he's my youngest, and we kind of called in the older kids, and we kind of had this like family meeting where we all kind of told stories about, you know, crazy mistakes and silly things that we've done. And we even like all kind of took opportunities to rag on each other, like, oh, Jake is so, you know, mean, and when he does this and when he does that. And we just kind of, and it was this safe, beautiful environment where everybody left with a big smile on their face going, we're not perfect. Like, thank goodness nobody in this family is perfect. And so we have no leg to stand on when somebody makes a mistake. Our job as a family is to rally behind them, to help them, to love them, not to judge, not to, you know, come from a place of self-righteousness. And as parents, you know, Ben and I, we're like, rag on us. What do we do wrong? Right. So like, we're not perfect either. We've just been alive a little bit longer and we've kind of experienced some more things. And so we get to help our kids grow and learn through their mistakes as well. So that's it. It's like just having this idea of None of us are perfect. We're all figuring this out together. And let's just love and support each other and not judge.
So cool. Thank you, Monica. That's so cool. I love that you shared that, those experiences. 100%. I just love that whole concept. It makes me want to like have infuse more silliness and more playful jabs, but not, you know, playfulness within our family culture and our meetings and things like that. That's
just
so
to be able to take criticism.
Yeah.
That's like something that, you know, especially being online, like we are kind of in the public eye where we're sharing experiences and things like that. Like we're going to get haters, right? And how do we learn how to handle and accept those things? It's in our families, right? So, you know, when my kids are, you know, mom's this, mom's that, why does mom always do this, right? I can handle it because we just don't take anything too seriously. That all starts in the family. Like we've got to be able to take constructive criticism. We got to be able to laugh at ourselves. We've got to be able to come to someone and be like, hey, I screwed this up. I'm so, so sorry. Like, what can I do to make this up? And so the end of that story is, so my son that made the mistake with the neighbor, right? My older daughter helped him make a plate of cookies, and he took a plate of cookies over there and he apologized and he felt so great about it. And our neighbor was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Can, you know, like we learn through making mistakes, and we learn through taking constructive criticism and jabs and just understanding we're not going to get it right the first time, and it's totally okay.
That's so cool. Awesome. Well, that's so awesome. Thank you so much, Monica. And so I'm just excited. You have some project that you're working on. Can you tell us about that so we can learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So I just launched the 5-day. It's a free Seduce Your Spouse challenge. So it's really, really, really fun. We got some amazing feedback from the first time we did it. So we're going to do it again in September. It's called the Seduce Your Spouse Challenge. And I highly recommend it. Like, don't be taken aback by the word seduce. It actually means to powerfully attract. So we teach for 5 days. We teach all of the strategies and tactics to powerfully attract our spouse. And who does not want to powerfully attract our spouse, right? So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. I think the participants did. A lot of them are like, let's do it again. So, yeah, if you see that around, the Seduce Your Spouse Challenge, I highly recommend you jump in because it's a lot of fun.
Cool. So cool. So we can find you, let's see, on the Brighter Side of Life. Is that your website?
So that's
the Brighter Side.
Brighter Side of Life. You can find all of my marriage and intimacy resources at onthebrighterside of marriage.com.
Cool. Cool. And you're on Instagram at MonitaNner1. So I'll have these links in my show notes. Make sure everybody come look for Monica and just look. This is awesome. So, so awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I love talking about this subject. And I know I giggled at the beginning. I'm sorry. But it's just like, it was more the word. I was like, oh, that's a funny word. But anyway.
Wait, oh funny. Gosh. But, you knew how many times I said the word orgasm and then giggled. Like it's
right? Like, oh my goodness. Oh,
that on the internet. Yes.
Yep. It's totally normal. Awesome. Thank you so much, Monica. I love talking to you.
You bet. Thanks, Jody.
Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with my guest, Joshua Shea, who is a recovered porn addict. And we talked about the importance of teaching and educating our kids about pornography and its effects and how scary it can be to be addicted to pornography. Again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Help more people find the show. Download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Success Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember to set your intentions for your family culture and lead your family toward your vision of success.